This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On the show this week, we're going to hear from Tara Shagog, who recently wrote an article for the magazine in which she talked to a few farriers about hoof care in the modern event horse. And one of the farriers that she spoke to was Stephen Fulton. His wife Karen joins me now to talk about the activities that they have at Full Moon Farm in Area 2, including the Pony Club. And we begin by talking about having two daughters who have taken up the sport. Hi Karen, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You've been running the business up there in Maryland for quite some years, haven't you? And you have so many different activities, as well as two girls that have got into the sport. Is that a blessing or not, having them follow in your footsteps?
Oh, it is. It is. And it's always a compliment when your kids sort of want to do what, you know, the same sort of business that you and your husband are in. I would say definitely a blessing. Can be a little tough on the entry fee department, but, you know, that's the worst thing that happens.
Well, let's talk about how they got started, because, you know, sometimes when they go into the sport, there's an expectation in the place of the children to follow in the footsteps as well. Did they need any encouragement, or were they already from a very, very, very early age getting going with ponies?
Well, you know, Stephen and I were really lucky with that, because we always tell them it was really great that they liked horses, because they'd be doing it anyway, because that's what the business is. And so, you know, we go to horse shows on the weekend and teach lessons during the day, and that's just the sort of the way it is. So it was great that they liked it as well. I think for them, all of their, because we teach a lot of lessons, we teach a lot of riding lessons. So riding was just sort of part of what they did with their friends, because their friends would all come here. And so it was, I don't even know that it was a conscious decision on their part. That's just what they did for fun. And their friends were here, and they all rode, and they went to the shows together. And so it was just sort of a natural progression.
Now, what about the natural talent, though, Karen? I
mean,
I think that's possibly a tough one from the parents' perspective, as to what is natural talent and what is learned.
Right. Well, we always tell them they were blessed with good genetics, and that's whether that's true or not, I don't know. But they riding was something that came relatively easy to them, I guess. Just, you know, at a certain level, you know, it gets much harder. But they both were, you know, very fortunate to have a lot of nice animals to ride, you know what I mean, and gain experience and stuff. And we really didn't, I wouldn't say we didn't have expectations, but we don't. Like, they, you know, they could stop riding today and that would be fine with us. But I think they just, it was, you know, like with any sport, it's something that you like to do, you're good at it, you know, you win and you keep going. And so I think that was sort of part of it. So
at what age did you realize that they were going to be actually very competitive at this and go on to young riders?
Yeah, that's a hard question, because everything, you know, you sort of plan for the worst and hope for the best, and, you know, you sort of lay your schedule out and sort of see how it goes. And we've been very fortunate, because we teach riding lessons for a living. My husband's a farrier, so we don't have, you know, there's not a lot of extra money. You know what I mean? The farm has to support itself, so every horse they've ridden has come with certain issues or certain problems, or were cast off from someone else, or we bought them at the sale, and, you know, that sort of thing. So they've had to sort of make their own, or at least learn to get along with things. You know, we haven't had the benefit of having, now I take that back. We've been very fortunate and had some very nice people along the way that have, you know, like Laura Jones. She had this lovely horse that she really, you know, wasn't using anymore, and her daughter wasn't riding it and didn't need it, and so she loaned him to us, and, you know, that's who Woods did her first one star on, you know, which is Regal Wood, who's just a lovely horse. He's a little quirky, but, you know, the kids, they and I think that ultimately makes them better riders, because they don't expect to do well because they're dealing with, you know, horses with issues. And so that's, you know, we've sort of gone along the way and gotten some good animals that people either, you know, were retired or whatever and sort of worked with. And, you know, that's kind of how they ended up there.
And how was the parent-daughter relationship when it came to the lessons and teaching? Are they very tolerant? Do you have a good relationship there? It's not always easy, is it, parents teaching children?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Because we also have, you know, two full-time instructors that teach here with me. And so I taught most of Woods' lessons because at the time she was growing up, we didn't have another instructor here. But as Grace came along a few years later, you know, the business was bigger. We had to hire more people and that sort of thing. But, you know, people always say that. And honestly, it's never been a problem. It's never even been something I think about unless, you know, people ask me that question, which is a logical question. But other people say, oh, I could never teach my child and whatever, whatever. And that's just never been an issue. They both, you know, we have a good relationship with our girls, but that's really never been a problem.
And a shared passion as well. So tell us about their major achievements then. I know they're still young, 16 and 19, but talk about what they've achieved so far and where you think they want to take their career at this point.
Sure. Well, the oldest one, Woods, Savannah, has, you know, she's been a weird kid. Like, she's been very focused and I think really knew what she wanted to do from the start. Like, I mean, as just a small child, this is like all she wanted to do was ride horses. Like, that's what she wanted to do. She went to Young Riders in 2011, when I think she was probably 15, I think, and did the one star there on Regal Wood. And then the next year later, in 2012, she did the one star on Ringfort Tinkatoo, which is an amazing horse that we were very fortunate through, again, Laura Jones, you know, had the horse and, you know, wasn't really competing him and, you know, needed to find him a job. And he was just an amazing horse. And she ended up taking him once she started working with Buck. We've known Buck since, I guess, Woods was probably 9 years old. He started coming for clinics here at our farm. And that, of course, was, you know, she just idolized him and thought, you know, he was the best thing ever. So when she, you know, decided, we did online schooling, she talked us into that after her freshman year in high school. And we made her do the first year in high school just so we weren't psychologically ruining her or whatever. And she really was like, no, I really want to ride. And obviously you spend a lot of time on the bus. And so she decided, talked us into it, and that allowed her a lot more riding time. And so then she sort of worked out this plan and completed PowerPoint presentations about how she could graduate early. So she actually graduated 6 months early with her plan was to go down and be a working student for 6 months with Buck before, you know, so that would sort of put her a bit ahead of the game. And then, you know, 6 months sort of turned into a little bit more, and then he hired her, and so on we went. So the Ringfort Tinkatoo horse, actually, she competed a whole bunch of intermediates, finished out, I think maybe it was 2013, you know, in sixth place for a young rider intermediate rider, which was awesome. And then, sadly, he had an injury at Jersey Fresh's two-star, and so that was sort of the end of his eventing career, but I'm happy to say he's back in regular dressage work with one of our instructors, and so he's hopefully going to do some dressage competitions this year. So anyway, so that's sort of where she was and sort of how she came to be with Buck, which, and you know, we couldn't say enough nice things about him, just in terms of, you know, some place that you're going to send your kid across country to work with. So that's been great. She's on 3 years, almost, I guess this is her third Florida with him. And then she was fortunate enough. We had a couple young horses that we had here, and she took one of those down there and, you know, took him through prelim as a six-year-old and, you know, did a one-star. And then we ended up selling him and gave us a little bit of money to then buy another horse, which is a horse that Buck had for sale at his barn that Woods had been able to ride for 6 months. So that was perfect. And that's Captain Jack, and that's who she's taking to Carolina this weekend in the two-star. So that's kind of her story up to the moment. And then Grace is about not quite 3 years younger. She ended up going to Young Riders in 2013 as a groom. Of course, she had groomed for her sister the first 2 years. She went and groomed for the team in 2013, which I would recommend for any kid that even thinks they want to compete in Young Riders. Going as a groom is a great way to sort of see how it all lays out. And then in 2014, she took one of Sharon White's horses that Sharon was kind enough to give us the ride on. It's a horse she had bred that was just a little bit hard-headed and just sort of needed some time, and she called us up and said, hey, why don't you come get this horse and, you know, have your kids ride it? And she's been awesome. And that's Wild Orange. So last year, Grace was fifth individually on Mary, and their team also won the gold medal for Area 2. So, like, that was a great way to do that. So that was exciting as well. So anyway, and then our hope with Mary is to Grace actually had two horses qualified for Young Riders last year. The other one was a horse that Sharon gave us to ride, Leo the Lionhearted, who belonged to Sharon's good friend. And Leo is just a great guy. And so he was also qualified for the Young Riders last year. And we sort of decided to go with Mary, who's a bit younger. And then the hope is this year to get Mary sort of out and do some intermediates, and maybe next year, maybe do the two-star, shoot for Young Riders with her at the two-star. And then this year, hopefully, Grace has got a young horse that we bought as a three-year-old that had 30 days on it, who's a neat little chestnut mare. Everything we've got is chestnuts. They're all chestnuts. I don't know why, but two of the horses Grace rides are both chestnut mares. And so Snaps is going to Carolina to do the prelim division, which will qualify her for the one-star in Virginia. And then maybe she'll do the one-star for Young Riders this year. So we'll see. So, again, it's sort of, you know, having lots of options, and, you know, we've certainly been in the place where you don't have anything to compete. And right now it's more, we can't afford the entry fees for the horses that we do have. So anyway, that's a better problem to have, though, honestly.
Well,
so,
absolutely. Well, as you said, you've got a wonderful training ground there for both your children and for the local community. And you appeal to local families as well. So just give us an overview, Karen, of the facilities that you have and what you offer at the farm.
Sure. We sit on about 80 acres, and that includes our cross-country course, which we also make hay off of. So all of our competitions are sort of scheduled around when we think we're going to get our hay made, because we need to be able to do that as well. But we teach about 150 students a week. That's sort of what makes their money, that and Stephen's shoeing business. It also helps to be married to the farrier, because, you know, that just is a hugely expensive part of this whole thing. So that really makes it a great deal as far as getting the school horses taken care of. So we teach about 150 lessons a week. We have between 55 and 65 horses on the farm at any point in time. Probably about 25 of those are boarders. We've got some young horses. We try and breed maybe one or two babies every couple of years. And those are horses for ourselves or horses to sell, just depending on if they're, you know, not going to be what we need them to be at the moment. But we've had really good luck with breeding some event horses, which sort of got us into our next thing that we sort of thought we'd try this year, which is the young horse competitions. Which we had watched at, you know, Wiradock and a couple other places, and thought that was sort of a neat way to, you know, to not have to use your whole facility, but also to get horses out and, you know, and especially we've got young horses, so it sort of made sense to give that a try. And then we also have our Pony Club Riding Center. We've been doing that for 3 years, which is Pony Club is just a great you know, they've got it all organized as far as the course management and stuff. And so we decided that would be a great way. We do a really good job of teaching kids and adults how to ride. But the horse management thing gets a little bit harder. You know, people don't want to pay $45 or $55 to, you know what I mean, for a lesson in horse management, whereas the Pony Club is just a great way to get that taken care of, to make everybody a little bit more all-around balanced with horses. And then, so we had our first recognized horse trials here in 2013. We've actually been doing horse trials since 1997. We were about 21 years in this facility. So we've been doing horse trials for a long time, but we sort of decided in 2013 that that would be a good thing to do. Like, it would just be, there was a little bit of a need at that time in the calendar for Area 2. We've already had that date, so we just went ahead and made the step and did that. And I think Stephen and I are both really happy we did. It's upgraded our facility. The jumps are great. Eric Bull is our course designer. He's done a great job. We had our next horse trials, obviously, in 2014, and we had over 200 starters for a one-day horse trial. So that was pretty exciting. So we're excited about that. But we're doing the young horse test in April and then also in July. And then we run a kind of a fun horse trials the end of July, which we call the Aloha Horse Trials, which is very casual. You have to wear Hawaiian shirts. You know, we don't want anyone to wear coats. And it's basically over a lot of the recognized track, but it's more of a fun sort of day. And, you know, everybody gets coupons for smoothies if they ride in their bathing suit, you know, just that kind of stuff. And lots of people really enjoy that. So,
well, you mentioned there, I mean, obviously your full range of activities, which is appealing to mostly to young people as well in the community and the families. I'm interested because we talked to Brian and Lisa Sabo recently about engaging children and keeping them in the sport, Karen. But how do you engage the local community, obviously, from which you pull on young entrants coming into the sport?
Well, Maryland has done something this year. I sit on the Maryland Horse Industry Board, which is, I'm the representative for licensed stables in the state of Maryland. And one of the things that the Horse Industry Board is just launching now is horse discovery centers. So Maryland has almost 750 licensed stables. It's a very small state, so that's a lot of stables. And out of those 750, we have identified 35 stables that are horse discovery centers, and Full Moon Farm is one of those horse discovery centers. And so what's happening in the state of Maryland anyway, and we're sort of leading the parade for, again, trying to grow the younger kids, because ultimately, you know, we older people know we love horses, but it's the younger ones that we need to convince they need to stop playing on their iPads and get outside. And so with the launch of the horse discovery centers and getting into the elementary schools as far as, you know, advertising, you know, putting flyers out, word of mouth. We offer, you know, discounts if somebody brings their friend to come take a riding lesson, you know, and so word of mouth that way, just to try and encourage the kids to give it a try, because horses kind of sell themselves. Once you can get them into the barn, they're pretty well sold. It's just getting them away from soccer and away from lacrosse, you know, not necessarily away, but just get them to try something different. And that's really sort of what the Horse Industry Board is trying to do, what we're personally trying to do, offering discounts on, you know, their first set of lessons, you know, that kind of thing. Getting out in the community, we took our miniature horse, Rascal. We do a summer reading program where it's Rascal in the house, and he goes and visits local libraries and, you know, hands out literature on horseback riding and horses and general horse information. And we had 2 years ago when we did that at the Finksburg branch, which is our town, we had probably 120 kids show up for that, which means that people like horses, you know what I mean? They want to see them. They want to be part of it. So it's just a matter of sort of connecting, sending those people to the right facilities that are going to give them a good experience. And that was sort of the idea with the horse discovery centers.
Now, do you find you're pulling on young people, children that have had some contact with horses in the past. Their parents may have had some involvement when they were younger. So there's some motivation at home. Or is this a new population, a new generation, I should say, Karen, of young riders?
Well, that's a good question. I would say it's probably more new kids coming to it. And having said that, we also have a certain number of kids that ride here whose moms, primarily the mothers, have had contact with horses. You know, either they took lessons when they were 14 years old or, you know, rode out of college and then had kids and then got away from it and are now sort of coming back to it. And we actually have a fair number of kids and their moms, obviously don't ride in the same class, but are taking lessons, which is kind of cool too. But as far as the general, you know, if I had to look at, you know, our enrollment recently, I would say it's more kids that maybe had done a birthday party. And we also do birthday parties for kids, you know, 2 to 12 years old. And that's a great way to get people to come in, and it's sort of a little tour of the farm, and they get to, you know, do a little pony ride. And then when they're maybe 6 or 7 years old, they remember that and they come back to it. So they may have, or, you know, pony ride at the fair or something like that, where they sort of know they really like horses, and then come back to it. So that's what we're here for.
And when you mentioned earlier how important it is to get them involved with horse management, you know, basically get in the barn and get hands-on experience as well, how many of those children would you say have that kind of interest, or they just want to get on the pony and ride and, you know, put it back in the barn for someone else to take care of?
Well, we kind of don't really let them have that option.
Good, I'm going to say. Very good.
Yeah, because that's sort of not what we're about, right? And horses can teach kids so many things, but, you know, we sort of feel like probably the most important thing it can teach them is just empathy for another creature. So it's not, you know, get on your bicycle and leave it in the driveway sort of thing. And so we really try to instill that in our kids. Even if it's not a kid that's in Pony Club, but just, you know, one of our kid that rides once a week on Thursdays at 5:30, you know, we try to, you know, and our instructors are really good that way about making sure that the kids understand, well, maybe the reason Casper's walking slow down the driveway is because Casper doesn't have any shoes on. And so the ride, you know, just make them understand it, so it's not just, you know, put a quarter in and, you know, ride around and then you get off and you hand them off. So all of our kids have to, you know, groom their horses. They have to learn how to tack their horses. They ride their horses, and they have to be able to put their horses away. And again, we have working students that help to facilitate that, kids that are 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, that are getting paid to help them do that. But, the whole, you know, throw the reins and, you know, walk to the car thing is not, and there's, you know, other places where that's fine, but that's not how we see it.
And so they all get that practical experience in the barn. They get really all-round training as well. So how many of those would be interested in going on to Pony Club and doing the Pony Club courses as well and becoming more serious about it?
Well, we've got, it's funny because our riding center is really, you know, we sort of took a couple of years to kind of take it slow and make sure we knew, you know, what we wanted to do. But this year, in 2015, we have tripled in size. So we've got like 22 kids that are, you know, that don't own their own horse, that are kids that ride here, you know, once or twice a week, that have enrolled in Pony Club. They're getting ready to go to quiz rally. Like, they're just think it's great. And so that's sort of that part of it. We also have equitation teams that our kids participate in the winter. So we actually have 6 teams that, you know, we go from IEA, where we're getting ready to go to our zone competition, all the way down to like a short stirrup league where they jump 18 inches. And so the format is they ride a horse, they have 2 minutes to warm up on this horse, and then they're in a horse show in a judge competition. So that's been hugely helpful, just getting the kids from a very young age used to riding lots of different horses and being able to deal with the different things you deal with. And our equitation teams have done great as well. We've, you know, had one kid in the that grew up, you know, as a 7-year-old riding here that was selected, you know, he was reserve champion for the EAP and he ended up going down to Wellington for the George Morris thing this year. And that kid rode at our barn, you know, as a little kid. So we sort of run the whole gambit, you know, and we always say with the equitation stuff, that's a great way to keep people interested in riding over the winter, especially these past two winters, which have been a little bit tough. But it's, you know, it's all good. It's all good horsemanship and it's all good riding. So it also helps to keep them interested.
And do you manage to get any of the parents interested as well to take lessons when they bring their children?
We do, and our parents are great. And sort of how we do it, because we have to, is, you know, if your kid is in a horse show, you have to volunteer for 2 hours. Like that's, you know, and the kid has to volunteer for 2 hours. And the parents actually run our horse shows. And a lot of the parents, after spending a couple of years holding horses, watching the kid, they're like, yeah, we'll go ahead and we'll give it a shot. And actually, one of our fundraisers for our young riders this year, we do a games day. And one of the divisions is for parents lead line. So the kids lead line their parents and they do barrel racing and pole bending and a catalog race. And it's funny, from that little bit of riding, some of the parents have sort of come back and like started taking lessons. And it's also amazing, after watching years and years of lessons, those parents are so far ahead of someone who hasn't done that, it's not even funny. Like they could tell you how to post on the correct diagonal. They may never have trotted before, but you know what I mean? It's just so much easier for them to do that. So we don't discriminate. We'll take any of them.
Right. So they get the groundwork before they get on the horses, and then they get their children to take them on the lead rein. A perfect combination there, Karen. No wonder it's very much a family fair at Full Moon Farm. You really engage the whole family, and some wonderful activities too. You obviously are very busy, so I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show this week, Karen, and the very best of luck with your season ahead.
Thank you so much for having us.
Tara Shagog joins us now to tell us about the article that she recently wrote for Eventing USA magazine. Tara, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Chris.
You spoke to 3 farriers as part of your research, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I was very fortunate. I know how busy farriers are, and I was able to speak with 3 farriers, and all 3 of them were able to provide me some insight on different trends they've seen develop on primarily the East Coast, and the feet of the event horses, and, you know, kind of things we can do as riders to help be proactive against some of those issues.
Well, tell us who they were and how much involvement they have with shoeing event horses on a daily basis.
Sure. One of the first farriers I was able to speak with was the former Canadian eventing team farrier, Randy Pollock, and he was wonderful. He, you know, obviously has been shoeing event horses' feet for many years, and so he had a lot of knowledge on that. And, you know, in speaking to Randy, he really brought up the point that a lot of times horses travel to the event horses from Europe or the West Coast, and they come live and compete here on the East Coast. And therefore, you know, their feet are not, you know, used to this type of climate that we deal with on the East Coast. And everybody knows that, you know, our winters aren't always wonderful, and we have a lot of humidity in the air and a lot of dampness. So, he really stressed the fact that when these horses are traveling from these other areas to this types of climate, you know, it takes their feet a little bit of time to be able to adjust. So that was something that, you know, you don't necessarily think of all the time, but it makes perfect sense when you're dealing with these event horses and their feet. I also got to speak with farrier Kevin Oyarzo of Maryland Horseshoeing. He is an AFA certified farrier, and he is a farrier local to the area here in Maryland. And a lot of things that he brought up were that, you know, thoroughbreds are traditionally continue to be the primary breed in event horses. And, you know, they're known to have thinner soles and walls. And so a lot of times that, you know, when the constant stress and pounding of your competitions and your training day out, that it can cause, you know, many bruises and sole bruises, which, as we all know, can often lead to things like abscesses, which put a delay on our training and competition schedules. But, you know, if thoroughbreds being as wonderful in the sport as they are, they do sometimes come with these, you know, these types of issues with their feet. And so
a lot of times, you know, he was talking about how we can help them is by doing extended heels or pouring support pads or really any other type of support pad to help protect their souls from that constant pounding due to the high levels of competition and training. And the third farrier I got to speak with was Farrier Stephen Fulton. He is also locally from Full Moon Farm. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar and with their family affair they have going on there. And talking to Stephen was great because he talked about how, you know, 20 years ago, it was very common for a farrier to pull a horse's shoes in the wintertime and give them a few months off. But now, as we all know, no one can really afford to do that anymore, especially if, at the upper levels, if you want to stay competitive year-round. So sometimes, you know, when the horses are expected to move up the levels a little quicker than they used to, this can also contribute to some of the issues that arise in their feet.
You know, it's interesting, Tara, because in Europe, I know historically, we've turned the horses out at the end of the fall season and completely rough them off and let them down completely. And part of that would be taking off their shoes and leaving them in the mud. But it's not something we do over here. It is, as you say, a changing trend. But one of the other changing trends are the more people are trying to ride barefoot as well. Did that come into the discussions?
It was mentioned a little bit, but not as much because a lot of the times these farriers are dealing with, you know, the advanced level, you know, riders and people at the very top of the sport. And most of them at that level, you know, do need the extra support with the shoes and the pads and sometimes the studs and things like that. So it was mentioned, but it was nothing that we were able to go into detail on with this article, maybe another article in the future.
Yes, exactly. It is a topic in itself. But one of the other changing trends that we see, it evolves almost fashionably with good marketing in a way, but there's some supplements are an integral part of an event horse's diet. Did the farriers have any advice at all for supplementing horses at really all levels and not just for the professionals, but the amateurs too?
Yes, all three of the farriers did mention, you know, the overall health of the horse and how important it is to not just focus on their feet, but be able to focus on their legs and their overall health in general. And, you know, how important it is for everyone to really analyze what is best for their horse and work with their farrier and their trainer and their veterinarian to establish what is the best program for them training-wise, as well as their diet and their nutritional needs. So all three of the farriers really did mention how, you know, to continue to look at the overall health of the horse. But once again, that's not something that we went into a lot of detail on in this particular article. You know, I wish I had the time to go into all of it. But yeah, they did talk about how important it was to maintain overall health for your horse. And like you said, either with supplements or with the different training plans, but to be able to work together and individually assess each horse's needs and how important that is.
So what advice did they give you then overall to improve the horses and maintain the horse's good soundness? Because we all know the old adage, no foot, no horse.
That is right. I know especially from, you know, Stephen Fulton, because he rides and competes in eventing himself. They all talked about just, you know, being able to give your horse different types of support, whether it is regular pads or pour-in pads that come in soft or harder variations, and the different types of materials that you can use. They also talked a little bit about extended heels and kind of like I was mentioning earlier with the wider web shoe to give more support to the sole and, you know, basically to help ease tension in their feet. They also talked about what we are all pretty familiar with is studs and the different levels of studs. But without going in, obviously every horse is different and every horse, you know, has different conformation and comes from different backgrounds. So without going into too much detail, you know, because it's on a horse by horse basis, those are generally the things that they mentioned, you know, being able to do to help with the, like I said, the constant wear and tear that the event horse's feet see daily. But the one thing that, another thing that Stephen Fulton talked about, which is one of the positive trends he's seen actually for event horses, is that he said, you know, he really talked about the event riders themselves and how as a community, they tend to be more in touch with their horses than some other disciplines he's dealt with, and how he said that working with all the event riders is truly wonderful, and that they're very involved with their horses' care and very informed. And so he said that he considers that to be one of the biggest plus for event horses and their farriers these days, because it's more of a team and cohesive environment to help, you know, like I said, work on each horse individually and assess their needs together to come up with a plan of action.
I'm curious as to whether they consistently gave advice on how frequent a horse should be shod. Of course, every horse is different, as we know, and the growing conditions for that foot are different depending on where you are. But given that you spoke to farriers here on the East Coast, did they have any advice about, you know, be sure to take those shoes off, even if they're not falling off after so many weeks?
No, we actually did not go into any specific details on that, primarily, I think, because each horse is so individualized.
Right, because I know, you know, they say every 6 weeks, it's a bit like us getting our hair cut. You know, they seem to be able to predict at least you're going to need it done. Because some, I know, budget might be an issue and they might leave the horse's shoes on longer than is wise. But then, as you say, we're dealing with a lot. These farriers are with top-level competitors who know that they're going to be pulling those shoes and changing them. And even just before a competition, they're going to make sure that there's new shoes or reshod just before a big competition, aren't they? Did they speak to that at all about going into a competition and foot care and management and reshoeing?
Actually, not a whole lot, not with this particular article. No, they did not. But they, like I said, all three of them did stress, you know, the importance of coming up with a plan of action and being able to work with your trainer and your owners and your veterinarian to make sure you do have a plan of action, you know, not only for your competitions and going into competitions, but your day-to-day training, and make sure that everything that you're doing is to help your horse's ability to its, you know, its best level of performance.
Yes, well, a good point there. It is important, of course, to have your farrier and veterinarian liaise so you do ensure the best possible practice. But finally, Tara, was there any general trends here that they found from, and you did, from your research in the evolution of the event horse's foot?
Not necessarily, I would say, in the event horse's foot in general, just that, like I said, many of the upper-level horses now doing so well are thoroughbreds, and they just talked about how traditionally the thoroughbreds have the thinner soles and the walls. And so they see a lot of stone bruising and just little things like that, you know, on a daily basis, just from constant work.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the program and sharing that with us. The article is in the current issue of the USEA's Eventing magazine. Tara, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
That's it for this week. But remember, this podcast is available for download from the iTunes podcast store. If you prefer to listen to it on the go, you can download it to your smartphone or tablet podcast app. There's also a transcript of each episode of the podcast available on the website at useventing.com. Until next week, thanks for listening and enjoy your eventing.